They've been making hit music for years, an iconic band. Now they're on tour, a new album out. It's like they've been doing this forever. And he tells me, our guest from Bush, Gavin Rossdale, tells me, you just keep going. How are you? And welcome to The Pulse.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I don't know what else to do. I'm not that much good at anything else. So I'm like a artisan, you know, someone who makes something, you know, like a knife forger making crazy knives. I just have this artisan life making music. And anytime I try and do certain other things, I kind of get pushed back to, yeah, if you could just do Bush Records, that'd be great. So I've been doing Bush Records, and we're about to go on tour on, oh my gosh, Saturday we start in Reno.
Okay, so this was just, you doing a bunch of different things, you did solo music, you're continuing to tour, and it just, people just kept saying, yeah, let's go with the Bush Records.
And yeah, I mean, I did, the solo record was in 2008, and I had a nice fat hit off that, but it was a ballad, and his Love Remains the Same, and I love that song. But I just felt like nobody wants a singer in a rock band to do a solo record. Nobody wants it. It's just unwanted. You know, you got to just, if you're in a band, keep it simple, play with your band or don't play. And I think that, so when I went on tour as a solo artist, everyone would be like, this is great. When are you doing, when's the band? Where's Bush, you know? When I'd done movies, all the techs, you know, the guys backstage, the gaffers and the crew. When's the next record, man? What's going on with Bush, you know? And so I love doing that. I do loads of other things as well. Some other things. I have a clothing line that comes out this week, Sea of Sound. I swear this week, Sea of Sound .design. Everyone's going to love it. It's going to be interesting. But people will be like, that's great. Now could you just make another record?
So this just sounds like for, you know, however long. I mean, it's amazing to think, though, 30 years of doing this. But you just keep going, keep doing exciting new things and launching clothing lines and doing movies. But it has always been about the music.
Well, what's nice is that, you know, to do I've got, the Sea of Sound clothing. I've got Eat with Gavin Rossdale TV show. I'm trying to get made and funded. Not easy on funding on TV, my goodness. That's an ongoing, like, oh my God. And in movies, you know, whenever I can or get offered things or get an audition, it's so much fun to do that. And it's kind of nice to do the acting because you interpret what someone else's work and words and character and all that stuff. You bring it to life as best you can, but you're not starting with nothing. Like I'm in interpreting someone else's work. You know, when I do music, I literally start with a blank page on a screen. Sometimes a few songs I do to music from my band or music from Tyler Bates, people I work with. Mm-hmm. So I like that. And I write top lines. I want to be a fake seer for the day, you know, like just do the top lines. She's amazing, by the way. I use her as an example because she's the best top liner. And that's a real fun job. I really like it. Way less pressure. I didn't have to think of anything. I said, like, okay, what would I like to sing on this stuff? And that's a fun job. But I love making music. It's just great. And it always leads back to music. Because if I get do anything else outside of music, it's like I want to go back to my first love, you know?
It is. First of all, I might know some people to help you with the TV show. Like, so this may be a way we can work together and do this. So I got you. Like, we'll talk. But take us back, because it's been a career that people have followed for a long time and continuing to do the music. And I don't know how many people know, like, what was that big break? Like, what actually got you out there and had everybody, like, you became one of the most beautiful people on earth and icon and like all of that different stuff.
What sent me there was one man flying over to England and coming to see us in a rehearsal room in Harlesden, which is like sort of the heaviest, it's meant to be the most dangerous projects in Europe. And there was a studio there we used to go and do our demos at, real great place. And this kind of very sort of I don't know what the word right word is, but definitely not street. What's the word? If someone's not street, what is it? It's like green.
Very corporate.
There's a guy who was from Encino with a tightly, he wasn't ready for the projects in Harleston. So he arrives and, you know, he's ushered into the studio, gets out of his Mercedes. They haven't seen those kind of cars unless you were a dealer there, you know? And so, he came to the studio and he took a chance on us, Rob Kahane. He took a chance on us when no one else was doing so. And in England, I was well known to the labels where I could get money for demos, as used to be the big thing. You know, they give you like 3 days in a studio and you give them some songs. But no one was ever kind of jumped. And I mean, I was signed in my first band to Epic. So I did a few singles with Epic when I first began. Then I had a band that no one cared about, or cared about even less. That broke up, and then I began Bush, and I couldn't get it signed. And I used to think that getting signed was like that was the sign of success, not a Lambo, or not like the caviar in a jet. Yeah. In my life, it was like, that guy's got a record deal. She's got a record deal. You got a record deal? Oh my God, it was the biggest thing ever. So that was the biggest thing that ever happened to me. It just took that one person to believe in me, which they did. And then the rest is whatever. But there's that changing moment.
What's that life like? Because I think from a distance, and I've done some research and I've read some of the things, and you didn't always love, you know, the kind of public life and the critics and things like that. But what's that life like? Because I think from the outside, you were living the rock star life, the movie star life. Was it everything that it was cracked up to be? Everything we out there thought it was?
A little bit more.
Okay.
No, I'm just joking.
It was even better.
It was a little, you know, it's like in a way I would think that it probably was way a bit more than people realize in some ways, and then a lot less, the cost. No one ever sees the cost of when you travel and you tour and you go on tour for 3 years, like we did when we first began, you know, basically, you erode and you deteriorate all the relationships around you. You know, like you're not quite as in with everyone. You've been gone, and there's a price to pay. You know, I just give you simply, like, if you see on the road, you see the techs that are out there. The most people that are living and touring and working in music have sort of, there's an element of like kind of running from your life at home. There's an element of like, oh, life at home is not as is more complicated, and so there's that human cost that anyone in a band, that's every single band, every single genre. That by being away, someone, it costs the family, it costs the friends, it costs the parents. You know, so I'm not, you know, I'm not playing a violin. I'm just saying that's the reality, that no matter who you are, the effort that it takes, the kind of sacrifices that have to be made are real. They're real.
I think it doesn't sound like the violin. I think what's interesting, and the reason I like having those kind of conversations, is because I don't think that most people get it. Like, most people sit back and go, man, I would do that. I would trade that life. I would be on the tour forever and everything's all good. And so it's interesting when you hear
that. That is the basis of the kind of like madness of FOMO, because there's that great Jordan Peterson concept of, like, you might see a guy, you know, driving down the street in a sports car with a hot blonde in the car, and he's like, you know, and you're like, man, I want that life. And he's like, how do you know the car's not, you know, not borrowed, not rented? She's not a, you know, a cool girl, and he's with a drug problem, and he's just like in over his head, just trying to keep up because he thinks that's what people are going to do. You know, we hear stories of, you know, young bands coming in and take their entire advances to go buy a big car so they can like flex. It's like, you got to live, you got to eat, you got to make the music, you got to pay people to help you. So that kind of, that sort of, those illusions are dangerous, because it's always good to have someone helping you, telling you just to be cool with your money, because there's a tendency, if you've never had money, that when you get money, you think that amount of money is just going to continue to keep coming at you, when advances are weird, you know? from either labels or publishers. They're weird because they're misleading because everyone gets excited about them, but they're your, it's your money. You're just getting a bit of it up front. So if you take it and spend it all, that money, which is yours, now what are you going to do in 6 months and a year? You know, that sort of thing for younger bands. So it's really hard. I think that the world is so cynical and always against the artists. You know, now after the pandemic, the prices of everything, there are people, there's a kid, I tell you, that we're going to take on tour. Really good band, really decent band, great players, great people. He was happy to come on tour with us. I don't want to say his name because I don't want to get in trouble with his label. But he's going to come out with us, and his single didn't chart, and so they pulled the tour support. So now he can't play on these like 6-5 weeks of sold-out shows to 4,000 people a night. That would really help the band. So it's like those kind of things are super unfair. It's like, you know, penny pinching, you know, also, you know, penny wise, dollar foolish, whatever it is, you know. That's really hard. It's really hard for people, especially younger people breaking in. And I find that the odds are always stacked against us. No matter what, the artists are the ones that just always are the ones that kind of get beaten up.
It's always intriguing to me because we've had different people on and this story, interestingly enough, even for the biggest stars, and you know, you guys playing sold out arenas and whatnot. Jazzy Jeff was here, DJ Jazzy Jeff was here not that long ago, and was talking about when he and then the Fresh Prince, Will Smith, had sold millions and millions of albums, and he had $500 in his account, and people just didn't understand all of the behind the scenes. Of the industry. Do you like the role that you get now? Talking about that other band that shall remain nameless. Do you like the fact that now, as kind of a seasoned member of the game, you can share that information?
Yeah, I mean, I feel sort of vaguely powerless about it. It's good to talk about because things aren't going to change. And I'm all about the progress. You know, I mean, for example, I love Joe Rogan. I think he's incredible. Love him, really enjoy his podcast. Smart, inquisitive, he's just excellent. Now, of course, to join Spotify, he got very well paid to join Spotify. But of course, Spotify is built on the back of the musicians that have been complaining for years. And this is not Joe Rogan's fault by any means. This is the nature of the business.
Sure.
That these guys are coming and they get these advances, but the people that make the music that go on there, it's really hard to figure out how you kind of, the remuneration is not quite there, you know, in any kind of major way. You have to be selling millions and millions and millions of streams to make anything realistic. So it's unfortunate. It's just the way that it is. It's just how it is. As I say, the artists are always the last ones to, you know, the ones who kind of end up paying for everything.
With all of that being said, I want to talk about, because you're on tour, and one thing that has never changed, and you talked about people sit back and say, oh, that's great, you're in the movie, when's the next tour, when's the next album? Oh, that's great, you've got a clothing line, when's the next tour, when's the next album? That has never stopped. So through all of this, you still have people who want to pay and want to crowd arenas to see you guys perform.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm like so grateful. You know, you have two kinds of people in bands. You know, there's sort of that punky approach where you kind of flip off the audience and kind of create some kind of tension, or you're just sort of madly grateful for the life that they provide for you, that they give. You know, that support is everything because, you know, music is only works with two people involved, you know, like you play it and you listen or whatever, you know. So, I'm just consistently blown away by people's support and showing up. And, you know, I see it every day where I come across people in just regular life. There's always one or two people a day who will stop me and name a song that has a particular impact for them, what it did for them. Often I'm sort of, mostly it's about giving people a sense of ownership back to themselves, a sense of self and a sense of power and a sense of resolve. Because I love the songs where things are difficult and plaintive and you're sort of like bearing your soul and complaining about something and things bothering you. But I always try and have a resolve. I don't like doom and gloom. lyrically, where there's no resolve, there's no way out. You know, you're in a sinking ship, you're in the Titanic, and you're gonna run out of air, and you're gonna die. I just always like, here's the door, here's the way out, because you've got to believe in, you know, life is magical as well. There's all these things that have a sort of a negative connotation to them. I am a really positive person. Like, I love life. It's beautiful. And I think that the world is more exciting than it's ever been. It's more advanced than it's ever been. It's more supportive than it's ever been. Could it be better? Could it continue to evolve? Of course it has to. But I mean, if you take anything, you know, mental health, I know that we've experienced horrific gun violence, you know, against the Asian community recently in Monterey Park and stuff. It's just horrific. But the flip side is awful. That's it. Full stop. Yeah. Awful. But I'm really glad there's lots of discussion about all of this. That there's a real open, much more open forum than it used to be. It used to be much more sort of swept under the carpet and not talked about and not approached, as you know, as we know through the whole civil rights movements. You know, It's sort of, you do get the sense that there is an attempt to change things, and there is an attempt to for society to improve.
And you're talking about kind of making a difference and the change and society evolving. And the things that you've talked about, and I've read different things, like very thoughtful in even the critics, the analysis, the reviews of your music. That kind of stuff resonates with you, or it used to. Does it still? Have you gotten to the point now where you realize how many people enjoy seeing you perform? And some of the people who in the past, you know, kind of seem to enjoy being critical, you just kind of push to the side.
You get a sense. I mean, you know, criticism is essential. You know, nobody's perfect. And the luxury of the great critics is they have, I used to feel guilty about this, that I didn't quite know enough in terms of the context of the history of music, because it's so difficult to spend your time knowing every single band, every single artist, every record they made. I find it quite difficult. I find myself having a spotted inventory of things and of people, because it's hard to keep up. So some critics whose lives are dedicated to listening to 10 records intensely a day for their work have built up a historical context that is impressive, some of the, you know. And so when it's a constructive, albeit if it's justified, criticism, you know, you can read it and you can think about it, and actually you can use it to your advantage, you know, and be like, okay, I'm gonna consider that going forward. But when it's just straight up sort of personal, and just, you know, that, then it's just, then just someone's just trying to have an argument with you silently, like poking you and then jumping behind a wall, because you know you never meet them. So that stuff is just annoying. But
you embrace it more now. You're better capable of handling it now.
Well, you back in the day when I began, I got to tell you, it's like when you got beaten up in Rolling Stone or something, you felt it because everyone saw it. It was kind of embarrassing. It was just like, oh man, it was like everyone was the water cooler of the culture. So it was trickier. Now the good news is that the world is so fragmented that if it's something, if someone says something really bad about you, the chances are not everyone sees it. you just hope you just like slide by that one. You know what I mean?
You're the first person I've talked to who had kind of said all of this exposure and social media and all that noise that's out there could actually be a positive thing because nobody's listening to it. Just kind of push it to the side.
There's a sense of that. I mean, certain things that people do deserve to have a universal attention. When people really screw up, that does happen. But you know, with us, we just love making music. We love playing to people, and I've never seen there's no competition between bands, between artists. The competition in music is within yourself. How good can I be? How good can I make this record? How good can we do this show? And then, because the bottom line is that people like quality. So I've always said that you know, there's too many songs in the world, way too many songs, but there's never enough great songs.
Okay. let's talk about the music. You talk about great songs. It's all about the music. You're on tour. You'll be here in Atlantic City in February. Tickets are still available as they continue to tour all over the place, nationally as well. What are we seeing in tours now when we come to one of your shows?
Well, the last few years, we've done quite a few co-headlines, touring this summer with Alice in Chains and Breaking Bang, where we opened up for them, playing an hour, and you generally played an hour. So you never, I don't want to play 3 hours. I don't think anybody needs to hear us for 3 hours. You know, I don't need anyone to hear anything for 3 hours. But playing for an hour gives you're playing a set where you just basically sprint. It's a sprint. You know what I mean? It's a sprint and just sprinting and taking no prisoners and just trying to win the battle of the bands that night, right? And by having it a little longer, and maybe an hour and 20, hour and 25, like, that's where we're at, just allows a little bit more breathing room, a little bit more dynamic in there, a little bit more up and down. And just, you know, my main thing is when we're doing sets is like, how do we get it so people don't get bored? What is it that, when's the boring bit? When's the bit where someone's going, I'll get the drinks, I'll go to the bar. What do you guys want? You know, let's get some merch, you know?
Yeah.
I want to avoid that. So we try and tailor the set and collaborate, you know, intensely within the band and the people helping us. And just to sort of, what is the journey you want to take people on? Where, what is it, the emotions you want to give them? And weirdly enough, it's really tempo driven, I think. You know, it's tempos that do it. Like, you know, you either get the blood pumping and rushing and fur, or you mellow and pull back, or you really mellow. And so what this tour looks like is, I'm about to go and make sure that's the tour we're going to see, because I'm going to the final rehearsal today, is something dynamic, you know, because I'm fully aware, I've been at shows my whole life, and there's that one bit, like three quarters of the way through, where you're kind of checking your phone, you're like, you know, I'm like, how do we just not do that? How do we make it so that people are just like, man, I can't take my eyes off of the spectacle?
Yeah, I think that's it. That's it in music. That's it in shows and interviews and what. How do you have so much that people are going, okay, that's good, and not, oh my God, they're still playing? But when's next band on? Does it ever, some of the people we talk to, and you look at largely the 90s bands, like there are now, you know, whole satellite channels of the 90s. There's this cult kind of following as we get older, you know. Do you ever sit back and go, wow, like people have loved us since the 90s. That's kind of cool. Like we're a thing now. And it's been a thing for 30 years.
I don't know. It's something about it is a bit revisionist and a bit, I'm being so English, we're kind of self-deprecating. And so it would mean sitting down, stopping and congratulating ourselves, which in of itself seems weird to do.
Okay.
I just would be like, what are you up to today? I'm going to tell myself how great it's been for the last few years.
People have loved me for 30 years.
So therefore that doesn't make sense. I think that there's always been an analogy I like about that thing. It's a bit like being in a dance competition. You know, you keep playing and you keep working and you just don't want to get tapped on the back. You're just working real hard to just avoid that tap, because you don't want that tap. Nobody wants to be tapped. And thank you.
David Bowie told you years ago, I saw in an article, that to get past all of the nonsense, you just outlive your critics. You just keep going.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I've had a few run-ins over the years with certain publications, or not run-ins, where they've, you know, haven't been enthusiastic about the band. But now the personnel have changed and it's different people. So, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Those critics, I really did outlive them. I don't think I actually physically outlived them. I hope, you know, I was never that mad. I didn't take it that serious.
Right.
I'm hope they're living, you know, perfectly comfortable, you know, lives, contributing to the world in a positive way. But they don't seem to be around as much, and that's okay by me. And I did. It was funny because there was nothing he could. That was it. It was such a brilliant thing that he said, because that's all he needed to say. And you were forced to just continue, buckle up, you know, man up, and just go forward. Like, so what? You know, you're being criticized. So what? You got a great life. Who cares? I mean, honestly, it didn't ever matter that much. It didn't matter that much.
I know that you've got rehearsal, so we're not going to, you actually have to go and make sure this tour that we're talking about is going to be ready. So
I do. My son, my oldest son has a soccer game match at 3:30. So I've got like 4.5 hours of rehearsal. So I'm like warming up in the car. My car's already packed with everything. I'm going to run out of here and I'm going to like warm up in the car and then get out and be like, okay, let's work. You've got 4.5 hours.
So one and a half more questions and I'll let you go. And it's interesting that you mentioned your son, because I was going to go down that path. In reading a lot of articles, you kind of talked about the rock star dad and how that has changed over the years. And it sounds like you're rushing out to a soccer match or something like that. Mm-hmm. Have you seen kind of that evolution of the rock star dad life as your kids get a little bit older?
I think most parents are really good and they just put a lot of effort in, as they should. And if you have children, I think we have a responsibility to watch them and mind for them and can't just sort of leave them. And, you know, I rehearsed yesterday, the night before, in the day, and then went and did like an hour of flag football watching and then 2 hours of watching baseball training. And it was really cold, and I was like, my voice, I felt like Pavarotti, all paranoid about my throat. I was like, oh. And then, you don't want anyone to talk to in the park, it's so cold. It's like, if I just shut up, and I've got the scarf on, I'm just like bundled up, it's not gonna hurt my voice, right? You know, because like, as a singer, you gotta think about all these things. You can't be standing outside when it's like 40 degrees for an hour doing nothing, watching kids not catch the ball.
This is that segment, celebrities, they're just like us. Final question. We always end the Pulse with the concept of use your voice for good and ask people what that means for them. So what does that mean for you?
Well, I really am in the luxurious position of being able to put my thoughts into songs. So when I saw the Charlottesville riots back in the day, it was almost the beginning of the whole rebirth of the massive attention on what was going on in America. I wrote a song called This Is War about that. This is war, this is a strange fruit. This, you know, and I used that Nina Simone reference and nobody picked up on it. It was the weirdest thing. But I've used it, so I, you know, the kingdom, I've used it in Flowers on a Grave about the loneliness of the pandemic, and this last More Than Machines. I was really proud to be able to get in to the girls are in control, not the government, and to sort of address that issue that I found very strange and was in real big need of open discussion. And so my job is to not lead people to say things. I'm not a preacher or a politician, but I'm allowed to say, hey, shouldn't we be talking about this? What's happening here? What's happening here? Feel good about this? Is everyone on board? So that's my, I'm really, really fortunate in that I do have a voice. It's not the biggest voice in the world, but it's a voice.
Gavin Rossdale, I appreciate you taking some time off with us. Go ahead and go to practice and get to the soccer match and get on tour. We will see you in Atlantic City in February here and then all over the country. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's good fun.
Appreciate
all the best.
Thank you once again for listening to this episode of The Pulse. Today with Bush frontman, musician, 90s icon, Gavin Rossdale. And I enjoyed hearing some of the behind-the-scenes stories, the challenges that they face, the successes that he's experienced, but also just the commitment to the music, the desire to keep going. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I want to remind you to hit subscribe so every week when a new Pulse episode comes out, you'll get the notification. If you want to watch on TV and you happen to be in Philadelphia, you can check us out on Fox 29, 6:30 on Mondays. Of course, nationally on Fox Soul, also on Mondays. And all episodes are on YouTube. I encourage you to go over there, give a little search, and see some of the great guests that we've had in the past. You can follow me, hit me up, interact on social media at Bill A. Fox 29. I always appreciate hearing from you. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you that whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.